This week, we ask a question about the practice of Freemasonry. Is it a spiritual practice? We'll hear from illustrious Brother Harrison in an all-new Masonic Minute. Would you give up Masonry to be the President of the United States? We'll wrap it up with a piece published in 1941. Is Freemasonry's main job to make men? All this is right around the corner. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode number 433. Welcome back to the show. This week, as you heard at the top, we've got a couple great papers. And as we get started this week, I really just want to start off with a note of gratitude. I often make sure that I thank everybody for the ability to come on every week and be able to put together this podcast. And again, so much gratitude to our supporters, the people who make this show possible with your donations. But also, I want to say thanks so because what happens on occasion is I will go out to a lodge to do a talk or just go to a lodge meeting, and somebody will come up to me and they will express, they'll say that they've listened to the podcast for years before they became a Mason, or that something that we've talked about on the show has changed the way they felt about Freemasonry for the better, or whatever the case really is. And this weekend, I did two talks in a row. I did one on Friday night at Landmark Lodge. And I met quite a few brothers who expressed to me that they've listened to the show quite a bit. One brother, actually, a wonderfully talented artist. If he's listening to this, you know, I'll keep your name out of it, but you know who you are, and your artwork was amazing. Thank you so much for giving me some pieces of your art. It means a lot, and I'm actually putting them into a cool book. And it's my hope that I'll be able to organize it in such a way that I can show off not only your art, but the notes that you made on the back. So I'm working on that. But also this last weekend, I received a piece of mail. I think I tweeted about it or I put it on Instagram. I got something from a brother named Arthur, and I was blown away by the gift, but I was really touched deeply by the letter that he wrote that came along with it, and it was emotionally touching to read, just to know that this podcast that we put out every week has made the impact it had for him. And you know, I'm not some expert or anything like that, but I'm just trying to put together Masonic education and to showcase in some areas of Freemasonry where notably it's lacking the spiritual side of things, and also not to forget about the fellowship and the social time as well. So we're really just trying to fire on all cylinders, and I just want to say thank you for the thank yous. Thank you for the thank yous. It's just been amazing to be able to do this, and it's a gift to be able to do this every week. So thank you guys. I hope I'm not being too sappy on you, but it just really, really, from the bottom of my heart, I don't know what else to say. You guys are amazing. So, just a note about Landmark Lodge. They had me come out, and I got to do a presentation with, I followed, tough act to follow, let me tell you, Brother Bull Garlington, who is an award-winning author, and he gave this talk where he just spoke from the cuff. And he gave a really inspiring talk. And I could look around the room and I saw guys getting energized by what he was saying. I don't think Chris listens to this show or anything, but if you get a chance to ever catch Bull Garlington do his thing, go. He is a wonderful human. and a great Mason. But I also got to thank Tim Thomason, who is a longtime listener to the podcast. He interacts with us on the Masonic Roundtable. And he pulled out all the stops for this Masonic education event out at Landmark Lodge. He's the junior warden out there, and he just did a great job. So if you know Tim, or you're wondering, hey, I need somebody to do something great, and I don't know who can do it. Well, I know, I can tell you, Tim Thomason can do it. That dude is a brother through and through. So my thanks goes out to Tim also, and to the worshipful master out there, Chris Lang. You know, it's kind of a shame. Just before the meeting ended, we kind of started talking about something kind of deep, and I really would have loved to go out for beers and had one with you to chit-chat about that a little bit more. But I'm hoping in the future we can do that. But I did have to get home and tuck the kids in and do all that. Then the next day, Brother Patrick Sand of Libertyville Lodge 492 put on an education symposium, and he just did such an amazing job at putting this thing together. He and his wife worked really hard. We had about 30, 35, maybe 40 brothers show up. The food was awesome. We ate, and then I think I was the first presenter. I did the Ark and Freemasonry, and I think it went okay. First time doing that presentation. But for me, what was just awesome was seeing my friend Spencer Hallman. If you guys get a chance to see that guy in action, do it. He got to talk about one of my favorite topics, which is the tarot. And he did a wonderful job explaining the tarot to people who probably didn't know much about it, to be honest. And I was just taking notes about how he was explaining the tarot, and I thought, you know, that would be just a really good idea to make sure that when I'm talking about the tarot, because I talk about it often, but I don't talk about this stuff. So I was definitely taking some notes from Brother Spencer. But the next thing on the menu doesn't come out until March 7th, which is going to be the Southeastern Masonic Education Symposium. And the event details on the website, they do have tickets that are for sale. It's going to go 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. It is an awesome first-time thing that they're doing, and I think it's going to be great. The keynote speakers for the event are going to be worshipful Brother John Ruark, and I believe his topic is the philosophical elements of the circumpunct. Worshipful Brother Jason Richards will be doing Diluvian Origins, the influence of the Noahide flood myth on craft masonry. So it's the pre-Hiramic legend, which is the Grand Manuscript, I believe. And Brother Juan Sepulveda will be doing Applied Freemasonry, Ancient Teachings in Today's World. Let me tell you that Juan does this outstanding job. I mean, all our presenters at this event are going to be awesome, but Juan, I have to say, does an epic job of moving Freemasonry beyond the walls of the lodge and into your life. And this is crucial today. That will be happening. Brother John Nagy, the coach, he's going to be doing the Perfect Quest, and I'll be doing the Esoterics 101 presentation. And again, because I've done that presentation a few times, I can expand it a little bit and be able to talk about some of the origins of some of the Western mystery traditions that we explore within the presentation itself. The actual event begins at 9 a.m. They'll have a few breaks in between each presentation, and of course an evening fellowship event, which is a separate ticket, but I think you can buy them together. That'll be held later on in the day. But I'm really excited to go. I have never presented in Florida, ever, so looking forward to that. And having some real fellowship with brothers in Florida. I'm excited. I think I saw that Brother Nick Harvey is going, and of course Juan will be there. Just exciting. So, I know we had quite a bit of information there right at the top of the episode, but I wanted to make sure I feel it in my heart, right, when you have to tell people thanks. So, I hope you don't mind. But let's pay the bills real quick, and then I want to get right into this week's education. and you're not going to want to miss it, so stay tuned.
All right, so it's time to pay the bills. How do we make this show happen? This show happens because you, the listeners, help us out. So how do you help us out, though? Well, since July of 2011, this podcast has been here waiting for you every Sunday night at 9:30 p.m. Consistency is the name of the game. We are creating weekly Masonic education for anyone interested in Freemasonry and its kindred sciences. This is not a small endeavor. It requires hours of work each week on top of what we all have, right? We have work, kids, spouses, and we've got a few ways to help support this show. Really, our two main ways are through donations. You can become a contributor, a fellow, or a producer, and you can do that through Patreon. We have a $2 a month contributor level. You get your name on our website as a contributor. If you're a fellow, that's a $5 a month donation, and that puts your name on the website. I send you a card in the mail. I handwrite these cards when you do those donations. I don't have these things filled out. They're not pre-printed. None of that. This is me really trying to say thanks. Meaningful thanks. And of course, the producer level. Our producer level is $10 a month. You get the name on the website, a thank you card in the mail. And also with that, I'll send you the producer's pin also. Now, that's on Patreon. We have a lot of people who like to support us through PayPal. We offer those same exact perks. The contributor, the fellow, the producer, with all the same stuff through PayPal, a subscription model. So you can do either one of those things, or you can make a one-time gift through PayPal and just say, hey, I'm going to send you $2, or hey, I'm going to send you $3 one time, whatever the case is. I appreciate all of it. It offsets the cost of this podcast. Something to keep in mind is that we also sell the producer's pin by itself. It's $10. I have a Mason's Lady decal, and of course the It's Business Time, Adapting a Corporate Path for Freemasonry book that I co-wrote with John Ruark that has rave reviews all over Amazon.com, and you can get it on Amazon, not autographed, and you can get it on Audible also. All of the money that comes in through this stuff offsets the cost of putting this program together. And I want you to remember that you're the producer of the program. And in the last 10 years, Masonic education has come a long way. Is it a coincidence? Maybe. But we have to keep this ship on course. We're always pushing for better lodge experiences, Masonic education, and this show offers a way to assist people in coming up with new ideas and things to bring to lodge and to educate new brothers and people interested in the craft. So I would just say, if you're already a producer, a fellow, or a contributor, or you've donated cash at some point, or bought a pin, or whatever you've done for us, thank you, thank you, thank you. Now, in addition to the papers we're reading this week, we've also got a wonderful new Masonic Minute with illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison. So we will break up the papers with that in between. But let's go ahead and get started. This week's first paper comes from the Masonic Philosophical Society, published back in November 22nd, the day after my birthday, in 2017. It's by Christine Wilson Slack. And this one has to do, of course, with esotericism, philosophy, but the title of this article should get you going. Is Freemasonry a spiritual practice? Now, I know what you're thinking. Right away, you know, a lot of the listeners to this show are already thinking, of course it is, Robert. Yeah, why are you even covering this? But we do have some brothers who are not into Freemasonry as a spiritual practice, but as a fraternity in the scope of learning from peers and networking and such. I think what happens is that even though that's where you feel your heart lies in Freemasonry, you are practicing a spiritual side to the craft as well with fraternalism. But anyway, let's go ahead and get into this, and then we'll maybe have some discussion on it. Is Freemasonry a spiritual practice? Christine Wilson Slack, November 22nd, 2017, philosophicalsociety.org. In keeping with the discussion surrounding soul and spirit, I wanted to complete the examination in part two, looking at Freemasonry, as to use the quote-unquote New Age term, a spiritual practice. Freemasonry has been called many things in its lifetime, a fraternal group, an esoteric organization, a cult, a charity organization, and a religion, among other things. Whatever the masses call Freemasons, or the Freemasons call themselves, their mission has been the same from the beginning, to create a better world starting with the improvement of humanity at the individual level. Quote, "Remember always that all Masonry is work," end quote. So says Albert Pike, a prominent 19th century Freemason. The Masonic work, in my view, is the internal, oblique, ritualistic work by which Masons are made and educated for exoteric work, which consists of activities for the welfare of mankind according to Masonic principles. It is this mysterious, hidden, ritualistic work where much of the speculation of what Freemasonry does and does not do begins. Indeed, sometimes Freemasons themselves may have a difficult time understanding what the quote-unquote secret things of Masonry are all about. In at least one Masonic order, and probably many others, it is specifically stated that Freemasons have a special charter to input esoteric knowledge into the Masonic members. By esoteric, let's use the basic form of the word meaning knowledge meant for only a few. Freemasonry, being a select organization, is esoteric in this way. That is, generally speaking, the percentage of overall human population that belongs to Freemasonry is extremely low. Esoteric, in its uncomplicated form, does not connote anything spiritual, religious, or occult. While some aspects of those forms of study may be esoteric, the word esoteric does not mean spiritual, religious, or occult. Be that as it may, many people find that Freemasonry lends itself toward spirituality. Spiritual means, quite simply, pertaining to spirit. This begs the question, then, what is spirit? To be simple and clear, for this I'll use the dictionary.com definition, which is, quote-unquote, the principle of conscious life, the vital principle in humans, animating the body or mediating between body and soul. Could it mean, quote, the soul as it is separated from the body at death, unquote, or even, quote, an angel, demon, or sprite, end quote? Yes, absolutely. However, when speaking in relation to philosophical discussions, the first definition is the one to which most people seem to refer. It is the one that, for the purpose of this exposition, that we will accept and use. The principle of conscious life or spirit, and its existence or non-existence, has been, for all of human existence, the core of much conflict. What is spirit? Why do people, cultures, and religions view it differently? Is the spirit of humanity divine? Why is this so important? What about the spirit of animals, trees, and rocks? Whence does this spirit emanate? What is its birthplace? The source of many people's ideas of spirit seem to be either what many would call God, or gods and goddesses, and the qualities of virtues we assign them accordingly. If we are animated by this spirit, and we ascribe this to God, and say that this part of our being has godly attributes, or it is, quote-unquote, divine. However, as is defined above, the term spirit is not demarcated by some kind of divine or godly source. It simply is an animation or vital principle in humans. It is when we ascribe this spirit's existence to a specific external entity, be it God, Allah, the Tao, Jehovah, or Zeus, that we run into human conflict. If one is right and true, all others must be wrong and false. Wars have been and continue to be fought over such questions as the origin of spirit. Yet, do humans fight over spirits, or do they fight over souls? This is where the subject of spirit becomes confused and perhaps convoluted. It is when the word soul is interchanged with spirit. Wars have been fought over souls, not spirits. When we discuss soul, I feel we must continue to be very clear about the terms that we are using, and that the meaning of the word should be as neutral as possible. Soul, to a Catholic, is very different than a soul to a Wiccan, Neoplatonist, or an atheist. Resorting to Merriam-Webster for common ground and looking at this form from a purely English literary and linguistic sense, both soul and spirit originate from a core meaning of breath, life. The major difference between the two seems to be that one is immortal, the soul, and one is pure animation and life, the spirit, with a specific beginning and ending event. The idea from these definitions is that the soul lasts forever while the spirit comes into existence at birth and expires at the death of its human host. In the base meaning of the word soul, there is also the inference of life-giving qualities. Given that both concern themselves with the essence of life and seem to inhabit the same physical space, it is easy to see that these could be confused and muddled in discussion, debate, and theology. I hear many Freemasons refer to spirit and soul interchangeably, but I am unclear whether or not they mean the same thing or something different. I do believe that Freemasonry helps provide us a path toward an answer. We do not normally say we perform a soul practice. What we are concerning ourselves here with is the idea of a spiritual practice, as most Westerners use the term. As a verb, to practice is to do something again and again until we're better at it. Interestingly, the word practice is not a noun. It is in all cases a verb. It is an active principle. As we've noted above, so too is Freemasonry. A spiritual practice using the terms we've outlined here would really indicate to regularly or constantly work at bettering the vital principle of conscious life. The term spiritual practice is something which we might say develops by repeated efforts, that vital principle animating humans, animating the body or mediating between body and soul. As the soul is the vital breath of humans, one must ask whence it comes in order to understand if it can be developed. Yet, if this principle is just that, a principle, can it be trained? Is it not already perfect how it is? There have been many philosophers, Aristotle, Plato, Plotinus, and Socrates, that have all debated this very question, the immortal and thus incorruptible nature of the soul. Can something which is, at its core, incorruptible and pure, be trained? Again, if we examine the word soul as a vital and immortal principle emanating from a divine source, then one must assume that it is something that is pure and pristine as it is. The divine is infallible. Is not the soul then also infallible? However, if the spirit, being that conduit between or mediator of the body and soul, is truly a breath that can expire at death, then perhaps it is this part to which we are seeking refinement. It would be the washing away of the film of emotions and desires that cloud the conduit that would be the province of a spiritual practice. This is very clearly outlined in some allegorical journeys of English rites, particularly the higher degrees. In truth, we see it in all allegorical journeys and stages that the Freemason takes throughout their entire Masonic career. Perhaps what we call a spiritual practice is something that is not to improve or better the spirit itself, but to find a way to remind our bodily world of what spirit and soul, if one believes in this, really is. Perhaps it is not to develop the spirit or even relationship to the spirit, but to be conscious and aware of it, to be cognizant of what clouds, conceals, obstructs, or harms that clear pathway of information between body and soul. If our divine self, as the soul, is to speak in the material world, the spirit must be clear to enable this to happen. Perhaps this is the reason that Freemasonry does not concern itself with a single religion, but with religion as a whole. If one is to know there is a soul, then there must be a reason for its existence. Perhaps this is also the reason that one must have a belief in a divinity to even be a Freemason. Why would you want to improve the channel between body and soul if you did not believe that one of these pieces did not exist? To develop the spirit first means to remove those things which impair the conduit and support that which assists the spirit in its duties. This practice would not concern itself with the reason for the soul's existence, only that it would be able to communicate clearly with the other members of the human world. This is where Freemasonry interests itself, specifically. As we progress through the degrees, different stories and symbols speak to us. Based on our experience, one may find resonance more in one than in the other. They bring forth ideas and discoveries that enhance the channel between body and soul by bringing forth triggers which illustrate our own blockages. We can identify the reasons and clear the path. Being self-aware is the first step. As we rise in Freemasonic degrees, the perception and understanding of what bars our way becomes more subtle and refined, and practice of clearing the way becomes more layered. Freemasonry teaches its adherents, with many varied messages and depths, how to clear and to keep clear the conduit. It teaches us how to act according to the great law which permeates the idea of human existence. One reason Freemasonry builds upon itself, in my opinion, is that you must be able to remove the common grosser obstructions in the communications before you can work on the subtleties. Yet if we slip, we need to start again. Practice. Hence the reason Freemasons consider themselves to always be in the first degree. In addition, Freemasonry seems to concern itself with all aspects of human being, refining and finessing as we progress deeper into its teachings. That is, it concerns itself with our mental, physical, and emotional well-being and actions. One must learn the fundamentals of the physical world via ritual and memorization before he navigates into the emotional world, subduing passions, for example. Then, only by understanding and mastering these worlds can he hope to achieve any sense of stability and growth in the realms of the mental. Most, if not all of us, struggle at any one of these levels and have to pick ourselves up from the setback, working at their rough, coarser nature again and again. Is this not practice? Perhaps, then, all of this work we do in all these degrees is the aspect of Freemasonry which seeks to refine the spirit. If one views the degrees as a spiral of life, then one can see the practice built into each of them, culminating in a birth-death. Not only does Freemasonry teach us how to improve the spirit, it also tells us why. Freemasonry does not ascribe a specific religious or theological source to the soul, or the body, or the spirit. It accredits the supreme and sovereign manifestations with the lessons of the degrees, the divine source. It assists us to understand how to let the unique message of our individual divine sparks to be heard, and enables us, through the lens of Freemasonry, to understand why it exists in the first place. There are many ways to understand the soul. Religions provide manifold reasons for its existence and purpose of being. While some religions also teach us through their ritual how they access the soul, they may or may not allow for the rich diversity of human culture and multifarious modes of understanding. I believe, in their dogmatic and rudimentary way, they seek to remove the moral obstacles which block the spirit, or the conduit, from achieving its goal, which is the free flow of divine essence from the soul to the expression within this physical, emotional, and mental realm called Earth. Where they might fall short is the lack of cultural messaging that seeks to embrace all, with different messaging tailored to the different human stories that arrive at their doorstep. Freemasonry seems to provide support for not only a diversity of soul origins, but also finds that middle path, that the neutral ground in order to develop that pathway that connects between the world we live in and the world in which the divine resides. The repeated journeys of the degree system seek to teach us, in a variety of ways, what the blocks might be and how to remove them, in a straightforward, non-confrontational, and non-segregated language. Freemasonry allows us as individuals to find our own path to the voice of whatever divinity speaks to us, and encourages us to express it as who we really are, without pretense, illusions, or corruptions. The work of Masonry is the work on ourself, repeated trials and approbations, developing, cleaning, clearing, and recognizing the path which connects the divine soul to the human host. In this way, to me, nothing else could be more spiritual. All right, a really well done piece. Now, as you may have guessed from the first paragraph, this is a culmination of a series of articles, and of course, I'm not going to read those for you. I want you to go back and read these articles. I'll have a link back to them right in the show notes. And do yourself a favor and check these other articles out. They're really good. Did you catch it when she talked about the practical modes and how this touches on our choices in everyday life and how necessarily this becomes a spiritual practice just based on the definition even? Again, a wonderful job here by Kristen Wilson Slack on the philosophicalsociety.org. Click on the blog and search through all of their awesome articles. But for now, let's go hear what illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison has for us this week.
I would not denounce or renounce Freemasonry, even in order to become President of the United States. Many Freemasons heard that iconic statement from Henry Clay, who served as Grand Master of Kentucky in 1820. Most, however, do not know the circumstances behind it and what else Clay said along with it. Clay said it because at the time he was being courted to run for U.S. President as the candidate of the Anti-Masonic Party. Clay, who conducted the only Masonic meeting ever held in the United States Senate chambers, had become disgruntled with the fraternity. He was fed up with the bickering, politics, and hypocrisy he saw in some members. Anti-Masonic Party members knew about his views and went after him to join them. When he told them he would not renounce Freemasonry for the presidency, he also said, "Freemasonry does more good than harm, although it does not practically affect all that it theoretically promises." I've never really liked that view. More good than harm? It almost seems like he's putting good and harm on equal footing, with the balance barely tipping in favor of the good. In my book, the ratio has always been something more like 1,000 to 1. But face it, it's the rare Mason who hasn't had at least a couple of negative experiences with his brothers. I've had them, and it's times like that when Brother Clay has made me a believer. We all have human frailties, and predominantly for that reason, Freemasonry does not deliver all it claims. That perfect Ashlar is a goal, not a reality. Searching for solutions to problems like these is frustrating. An individual trying to change the direction of the juggernaut of Freemasonry is like swimming alongside the Titanic in an attempt to push it away from the iceberg. These, however, are problems that will take years, perhaps decades, to fix, and no single person will make those changes. It will take a concerted effort. On one rather discouraging day, things were seemingly coming down on me all at once. As I sat brooding, staring at my PC, a message popped up. "Coffee Klatch, today, 9:30 a.m. Coffee Klatch? It sounds like something my wife Carolyn would go to at one of her DAR meetings. But this was something from the Scottish Rite. Just a simple get-together for no reason in particular. I went. It was even less formal than I expected. We didn't even gather as a group. We just milled around, shooting the breeze. Sometimes two or three of us, sometimes a larger group. That was it. We just shared bad coffee and good brotherhood. None of the bickering, politics, or hypocrisy that bothered Henry Clay. Many of the problems we all sometimes face come from a few bad apples. But the majority of our members are friends and brothers who can offer support. I walked away feeling 1,000 times better. That's when it hit me. The big issues will always be there, and we should never stop working on them. As for dealing with the frustrations on a personal level, the answer has been there since the beginning of our Masonic journey, and every Freemason knows what it is when he answers the question, "What come you here to do?" For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
Well, you heard it here first. 1,000 to 1. Brother Harrison, illustrious Brother Harrison, always has such a unique spin on things, and he's absolutely correct. There have been many a time, just relating to the bad coffee part of this story. If you love the way illustrious Brother Harrison tells stories, please check out our YouTube channel. Check out his YouTube channel as well, if you can find it. It's kind of a secret, or is it? But his videos we upload to our channel also, and I've heard so many brothers tell me that they create playlists of all of Harrison's videos, and they play them at lodge events and public events, and they're just like on loop. And the public just stops and watches the screens and listens to him talk. You know, I don't know if Carolyn, his wife, feels the same way as we do, but when Steve talks, we listen. So many thanks to Brother Steve for his continued efforts here, as always. Please check out his books. They're in the bookstore. You won't be disappointed. If you dig history, he's got, of course, the book on Billen. He also has the tremendous two-volume set that you can get from the Missouri Lodge of Research if you're a member, or you can buy them individually, but it's much better to become a member of the Missouri Lodge of Research, and you'll get the two books on Ray V. Denslow, who is like Mason of the 20th century, really. So check that out. I know it's most appreciated, and you owe it to yourself, really, to check it all out. My two favorite books of Steve's, of course, some would probably call me a basic bro for this, but I love Tales from the Craft, and I love Freemasons at Oak Island, but I'm a sucker for that kind of thing. And, of course, as I read, you know I read in Steve's voice, so it's a gift. The next piece that I want to read for you this week, actually, I teased on the Instagram page. This is an article that comes out of the Square and Compass, a journal of Masonry, which was first published in 1892, way back at the end of the 19th century. And it was published out of Denver, Colorado, October 1941. This is volume number 30, number 9. And if you hear me flipping pages, it's because I am. A really old copy that I'm just sitting here reading with bare hands, you know, and there's a librarian somewhere or a bibliophile who is turning in his grave, shaming me for touching these old magazines with my oily fingers. The article that I'm going to read is not extremely long. However, I want you to listen to it, and then I'll point a couple things out. Masonry's main job, making men. O.L. Dorworth, Grand Lecturer of Michigan. Recently, I sat with the officers of a lodge in a small upstate city until nearly 2 o'clock in the morning, pondering what, to them, had come to be a serious problem, namely, that Kiwanis, Rotary, and Lions Clubs, and a couple of local community clubs they mentioned, are carrying the burden of community service while Masonry in that town is more and more being subjected to criticism for failure to take any active part in worthwhile community effort and is accused of being unsympathetic, miserly, selfish, non-cooperative. Peculiarly, Masonic law does not countenance participation by Masonic bodies in any other than Masonic activities, and so, more and more, among those who do not clearly understand or appreciate this restriction, Masonry is being made the target of this kind of criticism and censure. But some years ago, I sat in a meeting of a large and active Kiwanis club when reports of the work done during the respective years of past presidents and the achievements of the current committees were being reviewed, and I made this interesting observation. Almost without exception, few at least, the men who had served this club as presidents from year to year, and the men who were then serving as chairmen of active committees were Masons. Investigation proved that this is largely true of all these clubs. Well, let's go back now and, quote-unquote, put two and two together.
If service clubs are doing the work to be done in the various communities all over the state or the nation, and if the men who are really doing the work in the individual clubs are in large degree Masons, it does not seem that Masonry is indeed making what is perhaps the most valuable contribution of all in providing the men who have the impulse and the desire to render service, a desire born, it may well be, of the impression or influence that Masonry and its teachings have made upon their lives? How vitally important, then, it appears to me, that we, who are actively engaged in the business of Masonry, officers, committee members, and team members, etc., come to understand that Masonry's main job is to make men, and not merely meet to make certain signs, speak some mystic words, repeat some mysterious ritualistic phrases, and observe certain ceremonial procedure. All that may be important to the process by which the main objective is to be achieved. But, in all frankness, certainly it is not in itself justification of Masonry's place among the institutions of the world. If that were the sum total of the responsibility and opportunity of Masonry, we might as well turn the keys in the doors of our temples, throw those keys in the river, and forget it, and turn our attention to something worthwhile. Is it not time for Masons and Masonry to awaken to the realization of present-day needs and present-day opportunities? The methods of only 50 years ago are not, I suspect, sufficient for the present day. Stop to consider, if you will, that only about 50 years ago, baseball had just begun to be recognized and termed the quote-unquote great national game. That only 40 years ago, there were no such things as automobiles, paved roads, and places to go as we know them today. That only 40 years ago, moving pictures were practically unknown. That only 21 years ago, station WWJ in Detroit began to broadcast the nation's first commercial radio programs. That it is but comparatively few years since contract bridge became a craze and strong men by thousands in America started chasing little white balls over 3 or 4 miles of hill and dale in a game called golf. Remember, too, that when our fathers decided to go hunting, they whistled to the hound dog, yelled across the neighbor on the adjoining farm, and together they hiked down to the back 80 to scare up a few quail, rabbit, or squirrel, whereas today they organize carloads of hunters, drive hundreds of miles, stay a week, and come back with 3 bucks and a black bear draped over the fenders and bumpers of their cars, distracting influences and competing interests by scores on every hand that our forefathers never knew, but which must be recognized and reckoned with today. Yet our main job remains the same, to make men. How important, then, that we learn to distinguish between and to properly evaluate the merely ritualistic and the stern realities between the esoteric and the essentials, the mere mechanics and the real meaning of Masonry, that we be very careful not to substitute in either thinking or practice the ceremony for the substance. Masonry has a part to play in helping to meet and solve the problems of the world. The kind of problems, too, which can never be solved merely by signs or secrecy, nor by mysticism or make-believe. Our obligation and our opportunity lie in making men realize what Masonry really is, what it teaches men to be. Read your monitor for the Entered Apprentice degree, and any Mason who sits back complacently and contends that the methods of our forefathers exactly or adequately fit present-day needs and conditions either doesn't know or is obstinately unwilling to admit that he does know what is going on in the world in which we live and happen to be a part. We can do nothing better or finer right now, it appears to me, than to consecrate ourselves anew to the real job we have in Masonry, to make men, and not merely to making members and showing them a good time. This appeared in the Iowa Grand Lodge Bulletin originally, again, reprinted for the Square and Compass, a Journal of Masonry, Denver, Colorado, October 1941, Volume 50, Number 9. So there you have this idea that Masonry should be making men, but it's a holistic idea of a man as well, something that I caught a little bit of in the air, if you will, of the way the writer was moving along is something that I'm very passionate about, and that is civics in Freemasonry. The idea that you should be able to go to your PTO meeting, and when somebody says something, or a school board meeting perhaps, and somebody says something, you as a member of the community, a Freemason, should stand up and say, "Hi, I'm with blank lodge number 2020, and we're concerned that there's not enough money to allocate for the kids and the school programs or the arts or the music or whatever the case is." It's okay to do that kind of thing. As Freemasons, absolutely. Masons have a civic responsibility. We've always had. Our degrees teach it. In addition to, of course, the philosophic and the esoteric, but those philosophic and esoteric ideas actuate the man and allow you to take part and to actually better the community, not through just charitable means and, you know, donating your hands and building things or whatever, you know, soup kitchening or whatever the case is, but by taking charge sometimes and getting active, doing things. You all know my stance on that if you read my piece or you listened to the episode in which I read my piece, which is why not discussing religion and politics and lots of a mistake, but I digress. So, that's it for this week. I really hope you enjoyed. It's been, as usual, a pleasure. Please join us next week on the Masonic Roundtable. We're going to have our 6-year anniversary episode. We're going to talk a little bit about our individual journeys, answer some questions, and have a lot of fun. And I hope you enjoyed the last episode where we talked about the Regius manuscript. A lot of fun. Gave you a great reading of it. I hope it was a great reading. I say it, but I guess I'm biased. So, once again, thank you so much for listening. Until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.